Chase Thomas podcast. My nephew needs me to record. See, I already hate it.
All right. Hello. It's Monday. Late on a Monday. It's the Chase Thomas podcast, and I am the aforementioned Chase Thomas, and I am joined, as I am, down there in Decatur, Georgia, Matt Green, fellow University of North Georgia Nighthawk. Matt, good evening, sir. How are you?
Good evening, sir. Glad to be back.
How was your Christmas?
It was good. It was I'm a big Christmas guy, you know.
That is a falsehood. As we were recording when you went full anti Christmas in the last podcast.
But it was low key, you know. Christmas Eve with my family. Mm-hmm. Christmas with Tori's family. So it was good. How about yourself?
It was weird. I didn't go home. For a variety of reasons. So that was unfortunate, not being able to see my family. My parents are going to come up this weekend to do New Year's stuff. So I'll get to see at least them, but not getting to see my grandparents and extended family and all that kind of stuff was hard. It was the first Christmas I've ever done alone. Thankfully I had, someone very nice that I very much like, the lady friend.
Mm-hmm. Good stuff.
Yeah.
It's a cuffing season, as they say.
It is, Matt. They all say it. And the fact that we're both very much in our 30s now, basically, that they love it. The youth love when they hear older people say cuffing season.
True that.
How much older are you than me? Are you 30 or 31?
I'm 30. I'll be 31 February. Almost 31.
Okay, so you're 2 years older than me.
Yeah.
No, well, no. A month, a year and like 3 months.
Okay.
Because I turned 30 in April.
Okay, yeah. So you're basically a year.
Yeah, basically a year. But yeah, that's good. What was the best thing you got, you received for Christmas, and the best thing you got your significant other? And also, Zeus. Which I never got a Christmas photo of Zeus, never got any sort of Zeus holiday update, no Zeus going crazy for the ending of Liberty Coastal Carolina, no Zeus content whatsoever, Matt Green.
You know, Zeus, he likes to lay low, you know, so he's not always trying to put all his business out there, but I'm one of the lucky men out there that... Me and Tori aren't big on the whole exchanging gifts and everything for Christmas. So we got a house. We got things we're buying. We're just like, oh, here, Merry Christmas. We just got a bunch of stuff done to our house. You know, just drop some serious money. And it's like, well, this is what we need. This is what we're getting. Merry Christmas. That's about it. It's about not as exciting as it gets. Birthdays, on the other hand, I got to show out for the birthday, but no, Christmas is just kind of like, we'll get what we need. Okay. Gotta love getting cash from the parents though. It's always a solid present.
Isn't it crazy that we're at that point now where it's just like, it feels so strange. I don't particularly like getting cash. Like, it weirds me out kind of, but I wasn't able to do it this year, but my family, we do this like, I don't even know what this game is. It's a very strange game, but it essentially ends up with everybody just walking away with a bunch of cash. And I don't know. I need it, and it's super kind of my grandparents to put together every year, but like, it is a weird game. And I don't know. It's just, when I was a kid, I had a list and I had all these different things that I was thinking about and wanting. Now I haven't made a Christmas list, or like, I get, it's just not even on my radar anymore. I'm not as anti happiness and snow and joyfulness as you are, Matt, but like, I do think it is kind of interesting where it just sneaks up on you, where you just sit back at one moment and you're like, wow, I didn't ask for anything this year. I don't really care about getting anything. Like, all I really wanted was like wool socks. Like, I really want some wool socks. Mom, if you're listening, before you come up here, I would love some more wool socks. I have poor circulation, Matt. So I'm very pro wool socks. I'm very pro things like that. So the lady friend got me some awesome house socks that are just like fantastic. They're just like a huge little heater for my feet that I wear every day. They're great. I'm all about
That's solid. Yeah, my brother makes a, or one of my brothers makes a list, like for my mom, or he'll tell her like, hey, you get this and this or something. And I'm just like, my mom says, yeah, give me a list of things you guys want or need for that. I'm just like, I feel like I'm 30. I just don't need to be telling you like my list. Like,
I'm an adult. I buy it myself.
Yeah, whatever. If you want to throw something my way, I'll gladly accept it. But I'm not just gonna like expect you to buy something for me. You know, maybe he gets what he wants at Christmas time. You know, so maybe I'm selling myself short. But I don't know.
Is he gonna be mad at you calling him out on this podcast?
Who knows, man? But he gets a better Christmas gift than I do. But my mom got me some cash. That'll always work. Never go out of style.
I suppose. Well, what to wrap up the Christmas element of this podcast? What did you get Zeus? What did you and or Tori get Zeus for Christmas?
So, she got some little like bark box thing from Chewy that just had like multiple toys and stuff in it and stuff like that. And her mom actually got him a T-bone and I just cut off. I was generous, you know, gave him a little edge of the bone, but I just cut out the bone and me and Tori ate the steak. I'm not just gonna give Zeus the steak, but I'll let him chew on a nice bone.
You shorted, you know, Zeus on Christmas?
I mean, dog doesn't need a steak. He already eats like a king, trust me. Tori feeds him well. He doesn't need a New York strip.
Oh my God.
I'm sorry, man. He got a nice bone. I threw him a bone, but I was generous with the cut. You know, I left
Matt Green, are you anti-Christmas, anti-happiness? You're stealing from your own dog, lovely friend of the podcast, Zeus. You are stealing his own gifts.
I would never. The bone was the gift.
Oh my God.
He wouldn't know what to do with a steak that nice.
I think he would probably eat it. He's a big dog. He's a grown boy. He just had surgery.
No, he didn't have surgery. He's recovered. Back, by the way, he just had to take a little time off with the meniscus injury, but he's back to walking on his frequent walks, his daily walks. So he's good. He's back at it.
All right. Happy to hear it. Are we getting a zoo sighting for social this week? Are you actually going to send me something?
I'll see what I can do.
Okay. Thank you. What bowl games should we watch this week? Cause it's very strange bowl season this year. Feels especially like, obviously this year is weird, but I don't know if you feel this way, Matt, but like I watched BYU UCF a lot. Not that that was a really good game. Like BYU just, and just a well-oiled machine, and I'm going to miss Zach Wilson playing football in college very much, especially get drafted by the Jets, where all good things go to die. I very much enjoyed that. I love seeing them shut down UCF. I think that's an underrated part of all this. The ending to Liberty Coastal was something that I've never seen before. That was pretty bizarre. It's just been sporadic because, like, Georgia State I watched way too much of on Saturday. Yeah, I don't know. Like, it doesn't feel the same as previous years, man. Like, I didn't do the bowl pick on my family because so many of them got canceled. Like, Music City got canceled and Tennessee bailed out. And I don't know. There have been so many opt-outs. Like, Florida's just like, we're not coming except for Kyle Trask. And then you look at Georgia and you have Richard LeCount. Looks like he's going to play, which is a good thing. But, like, I don't know. This bowl season, man, it really feels like the only thing we care about is the playoff. And that's the only interesting thing. And I mean, I know you're being a Georgia fan, like you obviously care about that, but I don't know. Doesn't it feel like this bowl season is just kind of a bummer?
Well, and in recent years, I know people have started to talk about that, kind of people who are like anti-playoff, that the bowl season's just been destroyed. I would say this is more of an effect of COVID than anything. You know, it's like, I think you're seeing more opt-outs this year because of COVID, just because, look, we went through the whole season. We've been basically quarantined 3 or 4 months going through this football season. This game means nothing. I'm trying to get drafted. I don't want to get hurt one last time. Like, I've given the commitment to the team at this point, and I think you're seeing a lot more people just opt out. I would obviously, we've seen it a lot in recent years anyway, But I would say the COVID seems like if next year's back to normal, I think bowl season will feel back to normal again. I mean, how many do we have? Like 8 or 9 bowl games that have been canceled? Shoot, it might be more than that.
I think we're in double digits now.
Yeah, so it's I feel like that's one of the reasons. It's interesting because you'd kind of think that would maybe make the field better, not having like the bottom 12 bowl games, you know. Maybe all the bowl games you do have would be more interesting. Mm-hmm. But it's not like it's just the 12 worst teams that
right.
don't get to go, or the I guess 20 worst teams that don't get to go. It's just kind of random. Basically the entire Pac-12 has decided not to play in a bowl game. Like, it just seems to be all over the place. You don't really know who's gonna play, who's not. So it's definitely weird. And I agree with you. I didn't do the bowl pick'em either. And I always do a bowl pick'em every year. And it just snuck up on you too. It's like that App State game. It's like that was like the day after the playoff was announced, and we're like, oh, there's bowl games. Okay. Like it was like there was no anticipation. It's like, okay, yeah. Now it's bowl season, and now it's like, oh well, UCF, like you said, those a couple games, UCF BYU, and Liberty Coastal, like I cared about those, but like Saturday night prime time ABC, we had Louisiana and Texas San Antonio. I was like, this is so strange right now. But you know, I tried to get into that game. It's just there's it's been tough to get into some of these games right that have been played so far. But I think this week we're gonna have some good ones, and it's gonna feel like bowl season again.
Yeah,
I personally if I was commissioner of college football, all bowl games would still be on Saturdays. Like, college football is played on Saturdays. Like,
a lot usually, of disrespect, you know, to Maction.
Oh, yeah, of course. I mean, maybe you get some Thursday, Friday nights just for some of those lower bowls. But, like, you don't need to be playing on Monday, Tuesday night. Like, how we always have the national championship on, like, a Monday night and all this stuff. It's like, Saturday is when we play college football. Like, why don't we just keep doing that every weekend? And you pick the third Saturday in December or something to start playing the games or something, just start playing those lower tier bowls. And then, you know, whenever January 1st is, we know that's kind of the benchmark. And a lot of people have January 1st off. So it makes sense to play games that day. But I feel like it would just be better if we're playing these games on Saturdays instead of we got Florida, Oklahoma on Wednesday night. It seems so random.
Yeah, I think that's true, but I suspect if we went back, a lot of those games felt that same way in the last couple of years, that bowl games have been starting to pop up around. Just it's more eyeballs in the sport. And I don't know if you saw Stuart Mandel's tweet today about the ratings for the season. A lot of those big games, but ratings down almost half across the board for all the big games compared to last year.
I did see that. Yeah, there was like 5 games last year that were higher ranked than the highest game this year. And yeah, Clemson and Notre Dame were each of the top 2.
Yeah. So that is kind of alarming. I don't know if that's another indicator of just what's going on in this season and just the pandemic is to blame, but I'm sure there's a multitude of factors there. But I don't think we talked nearly enough about the fact that Hawaii didn't play in the Hawaii Bowl, which bothered me way more than it should have. Like, I was extremely upset about this. I casually was tuning into Hawaii Houston. I want to say that was Christmas Eve, right? I want to say they played in the afternoon, but they played in the New Mexico Bowl. Hawaii, if they're not in a New Year's Six game on a Colt Brennan-like run, they should be forced to play in the Hawaii Bowl. Did we get? I'm sure there's a reason for this, because I think the Hawaii Bowl was canceled or something, that it didn't happen, so they had to go somewhere else. And they had to go to the New Mexico Bowl. I just didn't like that I had to watch the Hawaii Rainbow Warriors. Shout out to them, 5-4 this season. Todd Graham getting them over 500 year one. Didn't like it, Matt Graham. Didn't like
I guess
it.
They had there to find a neutral site.
Yeah, I didn't like it.
Right in between Houston and Hawaii, New Mexico is what they decided on.
Like, I really remember watching a lot of Hawaii bowl games late on Christmas Eve with at my grandparents' house growing up. Like, that is my thing. I love watching Hawaii put up 45 in the Hawaii
big
Bowl.
Timmy Chang guy.
Yeah, big Timmy Chang guy, big Colt Brennan guy, big
Devon Bess.
Yeah, I was going to say Devon Bess. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Let's talk more about that Colt Brennan team and that great Sugar Bowl that they played in. That was a fun one.
That is so, like, the way, okay, look, I am a, Colt Brennan's like the coolest college quarterback of all time. It was a lot of fun. The people
what makes him the coolest college quarterback of all time?
His visor, his
swagger.
Didn't
he get kicked off of Colorado?
He what?
Didn't he get kicked out of Colorado?
All the best ones do. Cam got kicked out of Florida. And we know how that turned out. So it's a great story. And Colt Brennan, just the coolest. The visor, everything about Colt Brennan. Loved him. He's maybe my favorite college quarterback.
I do respect the visor game. He was definitely he's definitely swagged out.
Yeah, he's just cool. But also, Georgia fans who were just so angry about that game happening and about thrashing Hawaii. They didn't deserve it and all this stuff. I'm like, do you understand? And this was my argument from the beginning. If Hawaii wins, that is a huge, huge indictment on you and your program that these 2-3 stars destroy, or not even destroy, just beat your 5-4 star loaded team that should have actually done that. You did what you were supposed to do. It's like Bama fans bragging about blowing out Notre Dame. It's like, you were a 20.5 point favorite. You have better players. You're supposed to win these games.
That,
like Georgia was supposed
fact,
to win that.
After the fact, yes. But
no, before. I remember I was like, people, no, if they win, it's an amazing accomplishment.
There was a lot of people picking Hawaii. I don't know if you remember that back in 2007, but there was a lot of people that were like, you know, this undefeated Hawaii team. Like,
because it would have been more fun. But they shouldn't have won. It would have been more fun, but they shouldn't have won. Like, they were not equipped. It was like watching varsity versus JV.
It was like watching varsity versus JV. Marcus Howard. Marcus Howard was my boy. He put that hit on Colt Brennan. Sugar
yeah,
Bowl
I didn't
MVP.
Like that. Didn't
but also,
like
Georgia fans, they weren't, like, mad at Hawaii. They were just, like,
my
so
family,
salty. How
all Georgia fans, by the way. Because my family was all Georgia fans, and they were chomping at the bit. They were talking to me like, see, Hawaii sucks, and blah, blah, blah. I'm like, Hawaii's amazing. What an amazing accomplishment to go undefeated and put up the kind
amazing.
Of season. No, they're amazing for Hawaii. Like, Nevada had an amazing season. Coastal Carolina had an amazing season for Coastal Carolina. It's all different. You have to measure them differently. They had an amazing season for Hawaii.
Of course, but Georgia fans were just salty about being that close to being in the national championship. And by the end of the year, that team was one of the best teams in the country. So they just wish they could have had an opportunity on the field. But
what I'm saying is Georgia fans are the worst.
You bite your tongue, sir.
You want to get into some news? We have a bunch of news and notes because, like, the bowl stuff, we'll get into our college football preview in a bit. Not a lot of bowl action outside of Coastal and Liberty, if you have some thoughts on that. But a lot of news. Urban Meyer reportedly getting eyed by multiple NFL jobs. The one that stands out, it seems like, is the Jacksonville job because he has coached in Florida. He is still relatively young. I want to say, is he 56? I want to say. He gets to sure. coach Trevor Lawrence, which is a great thing to walk into. The best quarterback prospect since Andrew Luck. I understand the logic there. I just really love Stuart Mandel's piece in The Athletic today about why he should say no. Did you read it?
I have not.
Okay, I highly encourage you and all listeners to do so because I think Stu did a great job laying this out where he knows Urban really well, and he points out in the piece, like, he's never met a coach who takes losing harder than Urban Meyer. Like, no one. That's why Urban had to retire 3 times, is that he can't handle it. Like, he is so stressed out all the time, and losing just puts him in a different stratosphere. Like, as someone who suffers from anxiety and really suffers from not handling stress well, I understand where he's coming. He had a brain cyst. He had chest pains through the middle of the night that his wife rushed him to the hospital because he had an anxiety attack. Like, this guy does not handle losing well. He is maybe the second best college football coach of all time. He has like an 85% winning percentage all time. He turned around every program he went to. He is an all-time great. He didn't even win. Did he even lose double-digit games at Ohio State? Like, he is a college football legend. At this point, I think he's now underrated by people who talk about it because he was in the same era as Nick Saban. But in any other era, we're like, holy shit, what a 20-year run from this head coach. He just is going to lose a lot.
He is an all-time great, but I don't feel like him being a bad loser is like a good quality. Like,
No. I'm not saying it's a good quality. I'm saying, and this is what Stu lays out in the piece, is that the NFL is different than college. You don't get to run everything your way. You don't get to out recruit everybody else. You're coaching the Jaguars. You're going into a situation where you're going to lose. He has never lost 8 games in a season. He's never lost that kind of way. Like he turned a program from 2-8 to 9-4. Like he doesn't.
Yeah, I mean, a good NFL team is losing 5-6 games.
And the way he handles stress losing too. Stu's like, he can't handle it. Like he's had to retire because he can't handle losing twice.
Yeah,
he was,
that
the
is
last
true,
time we saw him on the sidelines, Matt, do you remember he was falling over? He could like he was having horrible headaches. Like he couldn't make it through the season.
But the thing is, with a pro coach, you know, there's a lot of stresses that are off the table when you're an NFL coach, as opposed to having to worry about recruits and just the decision making of 18 to 22 year old kids, you know? Yeah. So it, you know, it could be a little bit less stress, you know, you never know. But at this point, like you said, Urban Meyer is one of the all-time great coaches in college football. And with the amount of college influence you're seeing go to the pro game, I feel like someone might as well see if what he does can work in the NFL, because he's been such a good coach at literally every stop. Like there's not many guys that have been as successful at so many stops, you know, with just from Bowling Green, Utah, Florida, and Ohio State. So I'm convinced anywhere he goes, he can be successful, because he's yet to prove us otherwise.
I like Urban a lot. I don't think he should coach in the NFL. I don't think it would go well. And I don't even think he should really coach anymore, based on everything I know about his health.
Well, he's such a good recruiter. Like,
yeah,
he's an elite of elite recruiter, and just establishing that reputation is the most difficult part. So mm-hmm. He could go to Texas, he could go to USC, he could go to any of these programs and win a national championship. Like, I'm 100% convinced of that. So yeah. It's just a professional. It's just how whatever his like professional goals are. I would imagine just with the amount of success he's had at the college level, he might just want to see if what he does can work in the NFL. I
don't want to see him fall over in the sidelines. I don't want him to lose it at 1-6 with the Jaguars. Like
Trevor Lawrence to be coached by him, because I feel like I just want Trevor Lawrence to go into just any normal NFL offense, because I feel like he would thrive. Like not that Urban Meyer's offense isn't going to work, but I feel like it seems gimmicky a little for the NFL, right? Like, I mean, maybe that's the standard way people are going to be in the NFL. Like, I mean, that's kind of what Jalen Hurts has been doing this year.
That's what Lamar did last year and went to a number one seed. Like, I think it's not really gimmicky. It's just more like the NFL is more RPO heavy. It's more conducive to that kind of spread system. Most teams run the spread. Most teams are in 11 personnel. They're not using a fullback. They're doing play action a bunch. They're in the gun all the time. Like, the NFL has really evolved due to what the college game is giving them. Like,
I guess what I'm saying is Trevor Lawrence is such a prototype. Mm-hmm. I almost feel like it's selling his skill set short if you put him in an offense mm-hmm. like that. Not that he couldn't be super successful in it.
Yeah. De'Eriq King returning for his 19th college season. Really happy about that. I hope him and Sam Ehlinger both come back. It looks like Ehlinger is leaning towards it. I love these Taysom Hill types who just
Ehlinger
like,
might as well, man. Like, right. Where's he gonna go?
Fifth round to the Giants? It's like, no, just go back to school, get another year. Be huge for Tom Herman in Texas. What do you think about De'Eriq King coming back to Miami? I think this is huge, because I think Miami has a real opportunity. Their recruiting class is really strong. They just got Jake Garcia from Grayson. Manny Diaz is really putting together some solid recruiting classes. The defense is going to be strong. The offensive line has been hit or miss this year. They haven't been able to run the ball effectively every game, but De'Eriq King has been an absolute monster in that offense. I think him coming back for another year is really smart, because this QB class is loaded, and he has an opportunity next year to run roughshod through the ACC, especially a post-Trevor Lawrence ACC.
Yeah, and that's the biggest thing. It's just with all the good teams just about this year are losing their starting quarterback, you know, assuming certain guys leave or if they graduate and everything. But Miami, I mean, this definitely makes Miami a legitimate contender. And like you said, they've got a solid recruiting class this year. And Derek King a second year in the system, like Miami would definitely be a legit contender to beat Clemson in the ACC next year, I think, with this move.
Yeah. Rocky Lombardi, the guy who wears nothing on his arms. It drives me absolutely crazy. No QB wrist tape, no gloves, no anything, just bearing it out. And I don't like it. Never liked it. It's always bothered me. So not having to see him anymore is a
raw dog in it.
Yeah, don't like it. I don't like it. And yeah, not my thing. But he's transferring to Northern Illinois. Do we mention on the podcast where DeJuan Mathis ended up?
We did. Okay. Yeah, he ended up at Temple.
JT Shroud, former Tennessee quarterback legend, JT Shroud, has wound up at the University of Colorado. So good luck to him. Showed some flashes down the stretch here in Knoxville. I don't think it's been announced where Jarrett Garantano is transferring yet, because he also entered the portal.
No, I haven't seen where he's going. Also, Jermaine Johnson, grad, or I think he's just a transfer at this point, from Georgia, is going to go to Florida State. So glad to see him not going to Florida, that's for sure. Didn't want to see him going the Brenton Cox route.
Exactly.
But Georgia also is, with Azeez Ojulari probably going pro, like, I mean, I've seen projections of him being a first round pick. I would have thought Jermaine Johnson would have gotten more playing time. So it's interesting that that he's transferring.
Some really sad news. Ty Jordan was an absolute monster this year as a true freshman for the Utah Utes, especially in that Colorado game. Great story coming out of high school. His mom had stage 4 lung cancer, which is awful, and that was profiled. I remember reading that a long time ago, and that was just, and she passed away. And then, tragically, he shoots himself and kills himself. And it was an accident, it seems like, and that family's already suffered a lot. And this is just, I don't know how you come back from this. And this is just such a brutal blow to that area, to that team, program, that family. I just can't imagine.
No, pretty much. I can't really add anything. Like you said, it's tragic. And from a football's perspective too, I mean, he had an excellent freshman year at Utah. So it's really unfortunate. I think he was Pac-12 freshman of the year this year.
Yeah. It just horrible. Dabo Swinney. You know how I feel about Dabo Swinney on this podcast, Matt.
Big Dabo guy.
Yeah, you know how I feel about Dabo Swinney. I've never minced words when it came to my least favorite college football head coach, I think. I've got some bad news, Matt.
What's that?
I agreed with Dabo this week.
Uh-oh.
Didn't like it. Felt gross. Needed to take a shower immediately after reading his quotes. I didn't like it. I don't know what to do with this. It's a new development in my life, but
hey, you're unbiased, you know.
It shows,
you know, different evidence has been presented to you, and you can change your mind. I'm also irritated by Dabo Swinney frequently, but I agreed with this as well.
Well, let's talk about what we both agreed with when it came to Dabo and the college football playoffs. So here's what Dabo said: "Quote, if Southern Cal had been 6-0, I wouldn't have had them in there. Every year I take the ballot seriously, but especially this year. I just don't think it's right that three teams have to play 13 games to be the champion and one team has to play 8. People have a problem with that. I don't really care. It's my poll." I would also remind the Ohio State people I voted them in 2017 and left Alabama out, which is true. And they were good enough to win it. I just think Ohio State deserved it. I'm an equal opportunity guy. Well, that's not true, Dabo, but I think the games
he doesn't want players making money.
Yeah, I was like, no, you're not. Let calm it down. Like, you knew he couldn't get it all out without making some erroneous statement. But he said, I think the games matter, which was the most important part here. And he said, I don't think it's right that Texas A&M, Oklahoma, Florida, Cincinnati got punished because they played more games, which is true. The game is not played on paper. Very good point. To just say they would have won, I don't think that's right. People take it personal, but it's nothing personal at all. Dabo is completely right here.
It's true, and that's why we were saying, like, the games matter, and you know, maybe the NCAA tournament in basketball, it just took them a while to get their criteria right, but I feel like they've figured it out. Like, all you can go off is the resume, you know? It's like, what did you put on film for us to judge you? And I think a 8-1 Texas A&M team did more, put more on film personally than a 6-0 or 7-0, is that what they ended up, Ohio State team. It just having to go through that entire SEC schedule. And it just, like, we're putting Ohio State in the college football playoff, like, to play for the national championship because they beat Indiana and Northwestern. Like, is that where we're at? And, like, that's just a bad look for the sport, in my opinion.
It is. And we knew it was going to happen. Like, I
wonder, we really did.
Are they going to acknowledge, and this is something that I don't even know, they don't want this kind of transparency, but, like, the ratings matter. I really think that was part of this, was Notre Dame and Ohio State are ratings machines. And I think that is an underrated part of this that Dabba didn't point out, that I probably would have pointed out too, is that Notre Dame was going to get in because of their ratings. And I think they also played a great schedule. And Notre Dame's a very good team. They're a top 10 team. You could make an argument for them. I would not have, but you can. It is there. And
the Clemson win is just like what trumped everything.
Yes.
Like, that was like the best win of, like, that any contender had on their resume, essentially, until Clemson beat Notre Dame. Like, that's really what carried them. And once we saw Notre Dame lose to full strength Clemson, mm-hmm. I just feel like I immediately discarded how they played without Trevor Lawrence. Like, it's irrelevant at that point. This team loses their season finale by like 4 touchdowns, and we decide they're good enough to play for the college football playoff. Like, I don't get it. I don't get them being in there either, honestly. I think Notre Dame's performance made it easier to justify Ohio State being in, you know, with just an undefeated team versus a team that just got blown out in the conference championship. Mm-hmm. But I'm a firm believer that Texas A&M should have been one of the four.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. I would not have disagreed. And I also think of the group, I think the teams that were left out, I think they would have had fared the best against Bama at this point. I would.
Yeah, because there's something about the current form that has to really matter. Like, I remember LSU, you know, years ago when they had the 2 losses, they lost like 2 of their last 3 games or something, but then won the SEC championship and got in. But like, just the current form of Notre Dame just getting blasted in the last game they played versus A&M winning like 7 straight games. Like, I feel like that has to matter to me personally.
I'm right there with you. But it is what it is. I agree with Dabo. I don't like it. It sets a bad precedent that games are won on paper, that it's just like they would have had to come out and just say that, look, we just feel like they're better. And it's like, well, then why are we playing? What is the point of the game if, like, you just feel like they're better? Like, I don't even necessarily disagree with the idea that Ohio State is a top 4 team. But they played half a season. We don't know if they would have gone 10-0 against the entire Big Ten. They had some clunkers. Like, they could have stumbled. They've done it the last couple years. They've struggled. Justin Fields had some really bad games this season. Like, he really struggled.
Yeah, against the 2 best teams they played. And I shouldn't even bring out the stat because I don't have it sitting right in front of me. But I remember seeing someone post that it was something like in the BCS era that like 45 teams have started 6-0 or something like that. And like 16 or something like that actually went undefeated or something.
Yeah.
You know, it's some kind of outrageous number like that. Like, yeah, we've seen a lot of teams start 6-0. And in hindsight, I really do wish Southern Cal would have gone 6-0 so that we could have been debating like, yeah, they're 6-0 and they're 7-0, but we just feel like they're way better. Like, and that's really the complete rationale. It's like, this team's number 3, but this other one, if Southern Cal had won, would they be like number 11 right now? They may have shot up just because the conference championship, they may have gotten to like 8 or 9 or something. But yeah, it's interesting. It's just the gymnastics they do for this criteria that's changing every year.
It's wild, man. But hopefully, let's hope for the best, and it'll be good. Well, let's get into the playoff games, Matt. You and I are going to study them both very, very closely. I obviously am. I would tend to suspect, Matt, that you are more intrigued by the Clemson-Ohio State rematch than the Notre Dame-Bama game, correct?
Yeah, without a doubt. I just, looking at this Notre Dame team, like, we just saw this, you know? Like, I feel like Alabama is a better version of Clemson, in my opinion. And we just saw Clemson smoke Notre Dame. So I don't see anything changing, really. And Alabama, it's felt like, I don't know, their defensive standards are just so on another level from everyone else. Because we felt like all year, like, you know, this Alabama defense, they're not as great as they usually are. And then, you know, it's felt like teams have had more success running the ball against them this year. You look up and they're like 12th in the country in rush defense. It's like, oh, this Alabama team, they're not invincible. So you actually criticize them. But they're still, I think that's the only option Notre Dame has, because when they did beat Clemson, it was how they stopped the run and how they're able to run the ball. So I think Najee Harris is the key to this game. Even though he didn't get an invite to the virtual Heisman ceremony, I think he's the key to the game, because if he's consistently getting 5 and 6 yards like he was when they played Georgia, like he was when they played Florida, like, there's absolutely nothing Notre Dame can do if Najee Harris is getting chunks on the ground, and that passing game is just unstoppable.
Yeah, I don't think it's good for the sport that one of the two playoff games that they need as many eyeballs as possible has a game where it's a 20-point spread. Like, that is just, no matter how, there's no NFL playoff game that's going to open as a 20-point spread. None. Like, that's not a thing. That's insane. We don't talk about that enough. That is insane that that's where we're at. But
it's true.
There's just no way Notre Dame wins this football game. Like, we just know that they're not winning this game. And if you're a Notre Dame fan, you're like, damn, man, like, we had to, like, people are going to overreact to Notre Dame. And I think Notre Dame fans have a right to be like, hey, hold on. We deserve, like, some criticism here. But, like, our two losses this year are going to be against Clemson and Bama? That's our two losses? And you're going to, like, shit on us? Really? The two best teams in the country? The two best programs the last 10 years? And you're like, see, Notre Dame sucks. They don't belong. It's like, everyone, like, just about every team's losing to those two teams. That's what happens. Clemson and Alabama beat you. They beat everybody. Like, that is an okay, that's an amazing season if that is all that happened to you. Like, Ian Book had some really great moments. They had a great running game. Their defense has been great. They've had a really good season. They blew out North Carolina. Really great game there. They were really good. They played in the ACC. It was fun. They got to play an ACC dog game. Like, it's been a very, very good season for Notre Dame. They're just going to get blown out. But I do think if there's anything to take away from the Clemson game is that they had their shots early, right? Like, I think that's going to happen here too, is, like, we'll know really early on how quickly this gets away from them. Will this be over in the first quarter, or will this be over midway through the third? And it will depend on how Notre Dame capitalizes in their early drives and before Bama makes adjustments at the half and all that kind of stuff and just really puts their foot on the gas, because I think Notre Dame's defense is really, really good, and I think they are going to keep them in check at least early on. Now, does Notre Dame actually score enough early on to make this competitive in the fourth quarter? I don't know. I have my doubts, but would it surprise me if it's like 17-7 Bama going into the half or 17-14 Bama going into the half? No. Do I think it's still ending 45-21 or something? Yes, I do. I think Bama's covering, but I do think the college football playoff committee is just like, keep it close for as long as humanly possible, and I think it will come down to those first two possessions for Notre Dame, because we saw them fizzle out and get no points, miss field goal, just really costly stuff early on against Clemson, and they didn't take advantage of an early Trevor Lawrence mistake, and Mac Jones makes a similar mistake, and they don't do enough, then it's going to be over and get out of hand very, very quickly, because Devontae Smith's eventually going to make plays, Najee Harris is eventually going to make plays. I don't know how long it will take for that dam to break, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I definitely, it's not an indictment on Notre Dame just if they lose to Clemson and Alabama, without a doubt. I think the spread and I don't know, people's maybe lack of interest in this game is I think purely based on just how good this Alabama team is, you know, and not that Notre Dame's not deserving of being here. It's just this Alabama team's outscoring teams by 30.2 points per game. That's the most of the entire Saban era. And they've been dominating people for 12 years now under Saban. And this is the most they've ever dominated the opponent. Even the 1 year they went undefeated in 2009, they were outscoring teams by 21 points a game. So are you giving a score prediction for this game?
Yeah, we can do score predictions for this.
I heard you say 45-21. Was that your exact score? Or is that your idea?
I'm going to say 48-20 Alabama.
I'm almost guessing the exact same score. 47-17 is the score I have. I don't think it will be over by halftime. I could definitely see like a 24-10 kind of halftime score or something, you know, Alabama in control, but it not over. But yeah, this Alabama team is just so good. Like they're incredible every year. It's like they finally started doing what everyone else in college football is doing. And they're like, yeah, if Alabama's doing this, we can be better than everyone else doing it. And that's what you're seeing. They have six first team All-Americans, the most ever in the Saban era. It's just, it's pretty ridiculous. I don't know who's really like just counting down, just ready to waiting for 4 o'clock on New Year's Day for this game to start. It's like the Clemson Ohio State one. That's like, that's a great rematch, great storyline from last year, especially with the controversy around that game last year. It's like this is honestly the number one reason why I felt like Texas A&M deserved to be in, because just seeing Notre Dame get blasted 2 weeks ago or whenever that was, there's just absolutely no one that can possibly think they're going to give Alabama a game. Not that we would necessarily think Texas A&M would beat them, but there is that familiarity factor and the fact that they've won 7 games in a row. It's that, all that. I just don't see Notre Dame keeping this one close.
Yeah. Clemson, Ohio State. I'm very excited for this game. Fields has quietly had like it. What we expect from quarterbacks when, like, you look at the numbers based on, like, how you'll hear some certain talking heads talk about quarterbacks, where I'm like, oh, man, maybe he has, and he like, any mistake, we just have such high expectations for these guys. I'm like, and then you look at Fields' numbers, and you're like, okay, I think we might be overacting a little bit here. He's still amazing, and he's still just been crazy dominant. He's crazy dominant in the air, on his legs. Yes, he's struggling a little bit with reading defenses, but, like, he's still an elite college quarterback at the very least. And he stretches the defense, and Ohio State has figured out their running game. And you mentioned Trey Sermon in our rundown. And I think he is someone that has become a very big part of this offense because they needed to have variety. They need to be multidimensional. I think an underrated part of the reason they struggled against Northwestern was missing their leading receiver. Fields has looked at Agave like a bunch this season. He targets their starting wideouts so much more than everybody else. It's not even funny. And I think that matters, getting them both back here. I think Ohio State's defense is the biggest issue I have coming into this game, where I'm like, Clemson seems a bit more complete across the board. And I think Ohio State's defense really does scare me. I'm not sure they are built to withstand Trevor Lawrence and this Clemson group. I think Clemson's just more complete. As boring as it is, they are more complete. I want to pick Ohio State. I don't want Dabo to win another playoff game. I've said going in that I thought Ohio State had a really real shot here. I think they do. Do I think they're going to win? No. Do I think they have a real shot? And would it surprise me at all if they beat Clemson? No. Clemson did lose Notre Dame with or without Trevor Lawrence. That did happen. They've shown that, like, this game came down to a Justin Fields pick last year, and I think that Ohio State team was worse than the team that will be playing Clemson this year. But I don't know. I think this could go both ways. What do you think?
Yeah, I think you definitely made some valid points. that Justin Fields, like, he's still a first round talent. Like, he's still like an elite quarterback, but you, with how good it's interesting. It's like a cycle that every athlete kind of falls into. It's like you become good and then everyone loves you, but then you get judged on that championship, on that highest elite of the elite level. And then that's when people start to criticize you because you're just in a different stratosphere now. And that's where he is. So it's not like people are saying he can't play in the NFL or anything as much as it's like, oh, we thought this guy was a top 3 pick. Maybe he's not worth that. You know, I don't know. 6 games is such a small sample size.
Right.
Like if he had 6, you know, if you extrapolate his numbers and just double his numbers and it's 30 touchdowns and 10 picks, you know, that's a big step down from last year. In 14 games, he had 41 touchdowns and 3 picks, you know, but maybe in the next 6 games, he throws 20 touchdowns and 0 interceptions.
Yeah.
You know, you never know. You can't really extrapolate stats like that, but he's definitely been not as efficient as he was a year ago. And like, if you just look how he was the first 3 games this year, like we talked about how good he looked and he was flawless. He had 11 touchdowns and 11 incompletions in the first 3 games of the season, completing 87% of his passes. What I worry about is he's being relied on a lot more in the running game. And I feel like you usually see like a maturation process of a lot of these mobile quarterbacks is they run early in their career. And then once they start to figure it out, you know, then they're kind of picking people apart with their arm. And then, oh yeah, I still have this ability to run when things go wrong. It seems like they're relying him more in the second half of the season on him. Actually, he averaged 19 rushing yards per game in the first 3, and he's averaging 72 on the ground in the last 3. And you've also seen him throw 4 touchdowns and 5 picks in the last 3 games. And Northwestern and Indiana are really the only 2 teams with a pulse that they've played this year. And he threw all 5 of his interceptions in those 2 games. So,
yeah,
I don't know. It's not nothing with Justin Fields. It is something to talk about because of, you know, the standard he set for himself with how good he was last year. But he's definitely going to be the key to this game because, like you said with Trey Sermon, like he's not rushing for 300 yards on Clemson. So I think Justin Fields was bailed out last week by Sermon really just putting the game on his back against Northwestern because they played excellent defense on Ohio State and on Justin Fields. So this is going to come down to Justin Fields having to make some plays. And in the end, I think this Clemson team might be better than they were a year ago. And Ohio State doesn't look as good as they were last year. And so I think I have Clemson 38-28.
That would not surprise me. 10. What is the current? What's the number right now? What is the spread?
I think Clemson is a 7-point favorite.
Okay. So you think they cover?
Yes. Yeah, 7.5.
Okay. See, I think if Ohio State wins, Clemson still covers. Like, it's going to be something crazy like that where Trevor Lawrence makes a bad late game mistake or something like that and he just gets that, because remember the offensive line really folded against Notre Dame down the stretch in that loss in South Bend, and I think I could see something similar where if they get into that situation maybe. But I am going to say Clemson 38, Ohio State 33.
All right, so we basically have the same idea about both of these games. I think Notre Dame might have a better defense than Ohio State.
I think they definitely do, for sure.
So, yeah, I wonder if Ohio State's defense will keep them in it. I think that's definitely something they have to worry about. And Justin Fields just turning the ball over. That's something we would have never thought we would say after last year and the first 3 games of this year.
I agree. All right, Matt Green, you had an idea to get us excited and enthused about bowl season, because it was kind of a somber opening to this podcast about the current state of bowl season. To put a bow on this episode, what game did you want to play with regards to bowls?
Well, we all love these bowl games. You know, some of these corporate sponsors are all over the place. Yep. I think I'd like to just get your favorite maybe one or two favorite bowl game names. You know, I think the Duke's Mayo Bowl, that's kind of the low-hanging fruit. You know, I think a lot of people like to talk about that one. But my two favorite are the Tony the Tiger Sun Bowl.
That's a good choice. Elite decision there.
That's just a great bowl. Fun fact for you, the Sun Bowl is actually like one of like the two or three oldest bowl games that exists.
Oh, I love this. Do you have tell me you have more bowl facts. Give me some bowl facts.
I don't have that many more bowl facts. My other one was the San Diego County Credit Union Holiday Bowl.
You know what I love about that one? It's quick, it's easy, it's simple, it's something you'll remember forever. That's what I love.
Well, it's just, and it'll never change because the Holiday Bowl has only changed their sponsor 6 times in the last 20 years. So, but yeah, it's funny how these corporate sponsors, like when you grow up with them, they just make sense. Like I hear Nokia Sugar Bowl, I'm like, yeah, that makes sense. Pacific Life Holiday Bowl.
Yeah.
Like I just Pacific Life Holiday Bowl, and you hear
the Chick-fil-A Bowl.
You see the whale going in the ocean all the time, you know? I just like those corporate sponsors.
The Outback Bowl literally has it in the name.
Yeah, literally. They don't even try to hide it. And you're just like, yeah, that Outback Bowl, let's go to Tampa. All right. It's quality season. But
let's go get some Bloomin' Onions.
Yeah, now you see it like Tostitos Fiesta Bowl. I was down. Now you see the PlayStation Fiesta Bowl, and now the old
that bothers me. That really bothers me. And
like
I have brand loyalty to Tostitos because of these bowls.
Exactly, especially the ones that are actually like fit sponsors, like Tostitos Fiesta Bowl. Like I see where you're going with it. I see the connection there. You know, like you got who was at the Lockheed Martin. They have a good one. It's like the military bowl or something like that.
The military loves them.
Yeah, it's like that one makes sense. I get it, but I don't know what's your favorite one.
The roof. I love a sponsor who's like, you know what, our name's not enough. We got to get that .com in there. Get some .com action. You got to make sure that people know that they should be going to the .com. Instead of just Googling their company, you need to just go straight. Just go check out the website. Roofclaim.com Boca Raton Bowl. All right. Like, the Boca Raton Bowl is already perfect. Like, that's actually just, like, a perfect bowl name for some fun group of five teams. Like, we didn't actually need to throw anything in front of that. But Roofclaim.com, just, I just love the idea of just .coms becoming part of this, where it's like, go to what would be a great example of this? The MetroPCS.com, the Yankee Stadium bowl game, like just the Pinstripe
Bowl, San Francisco being AT&T.com park.
Yes.
Why would you put that in there? I just don't get it. The Insight.com Bowl is what I remember from back in the day.
Yeah, it's like, why do you need the .com? Who's also doing it .com? Who's typing in .com?
I assume this is the name of your company. If this is the name of your website.
I don't need the .com.
Yeah, but those are some good ones to me.
Yeah. The Alamo Bowl also is called the Valero Alamo Bowl. Was it always called that?
Nah, it used to be MasterCard, I'm pretty sure. I can like see that. Who is it? Like Ted Ginn? I feel like Ted Ginn playing somebody in the Alamo Bowl. I feel like the Alamo Bowl always has those, like, it's like a low-key good game every year. Like it's like some good brands that like didn't have as good of a season as they thought they would, but it's like now you're still kind of interested in like the 15th versus the 20th team or something like that.
Well, we'll wrap up here because we can change this. Because as to Atlanta Zone guys, the Chick-fil-A Peach Bowl, if it got renamed, if Chick-fil-A dropped the rights, what would be the most Atlanta replacement for the Peach Bowl?
I mean,
who's next up?
Coca-Cola.
Is it Coca-Cola? Are we still doing that?
I mean, Coca-Cola like is Atlanta. So
is it?
You're going anything. I mean, what's another brand? Like, what else is more?
That's what I was thinking. I was like,
Georgia
what
brand.
More? What Zaxby's already has something, right?
No, Zaxby's I don't think Zaxby's has a brand. Go from Chick-fil-A to Zaxby's.
That's what I kind of want. I want some.
They'll be the same sponsor.
That would be amazing. I would love Zaxby's to outbid them. They're from Statesboro. I'd love for Zaxby's to come out of nowhere and hit them with a haymaker and be like, we got the Peach Bowl now. The Zaxby's Peach Bowl. Doesn't even sound right.
I mean, they've got They got to throw shell out some money. They got the Chick-fil-A College Football Hall of Fame and everything. Like, they're gonna have to. Zaxby's gonna have to rebrand everything if they want to make that happen.
Well, they got some new sauces coming out with some new stuff. Have you had the Kickin' Chicken sandwich, Matt?
I have not.
Oh my god, it's a delight. It's extremely messy. Immediate heartburn after, but they're not a sponsor of this podcast. But Zaxby's, you could be. I would gladly do a read for the Kickin' Chicken sandwich. It's disgusting to eat. Like, I'll never eat it in front of somebody. But if you're looking for a 5-minute meal where you're gonna feel like just a dumpster fire of a person after, but if you have time to take a nap, get a good meal in, you'll feel like you just ate 4,000 calories because it feels like that. Super messy, but dip it in some Zax sauce with their, I forgot what they put in it. It's like ranch, some kind of ranch and chicken. It is so damn good, and I very much love it. But also, love a good chicken sandwich from Chick-fil-A. Love the original chicken sandwich. Can't go wrong.
I'm a chicken finger plate kind of guy, you know? That's where I go when I go Zaxby's.
You got to grow up sometime, Matt. You got to move
on. You get that side of Texas toast, you know? You don't need the I don't need the sandwich. Just give me those tenders.
What is your favorite fast food restaurant, Matt? What is your go-to? I feel like you're a Taco Bell guy.
No, I'm not. Honestly, those are probably the top two, Chick-fil-A and Zaxby's. Like, I live closer to a Zaxby's, so I go there more. But honestly, I feel like I eat so little fast food. Like, I'll go like Jersey Mike's or something. Like, that's
Jersey Mike's. Okay.
Like, that's not even. Yeah, I feel like I don't even really eat fast food other than Zaxby's and Chick-fil-A. I'm trying to even think. Like, that's. I haven't eaten McDonald's in, I feel like, years at this point. Like, I don't even know.
So are you cooking a bunch? You're a big cooking guy now.
I am a big big cooker, you know, big chef guy.
Interesting. All right, Matt Green, that is all I've got. Is there anything you would like to plug before we wrap up here?
I know we didn't get to touch on the rest of the bowl games, but
I don't have an Emmy, Matt. I don't have
Georgia
the spark.
Come out ready to play. That's all I'm saying. Expect Georgia to come out ready to play. I feel like the Texas Sugar Bowl, I feel like that game changed Kirby Smart. He figured out how to approach these. I mean, this is the third year in a row now Georgia's in a New Year's Six Bowl, and it feels like their season was shit. You know what I mean? Like, that's like the standard Georgia fans are at. But it's just, that's where the expectations are. And I feel like last year, I think they were missing like 15 scholarship players or so for that Baylor game. Like, you're going to see at least 5 or 6 just opting out of this game. There's been different reports on which guys are opting out, which guys aren't, but like the fact that someone like Aziz Ojulari, who I think is supposed to play, and Jordan Davis, who's had some injuries and he's playing, Richard LeCount is trying to make it back and play in this game, I think it just says a lot about where Georgia's focus is. And like, this is when teams play the SEC team in a New York Six Bowl, like, this is their Super Bowl. So Cincinnati is going to be prepared. And I don't think, you know, obviously Georgia's going to be shorthanded. There's going to be some guys, like multiple players in the secondary that aren't the starters that are going to be missing. But I think, I don't necessarily, like, you can make that excuse if you want, but I don't think you can make the excuse that, like, oh, they don't want to be here and all that. Like, Georgia got robbed of, like, their senior night, like, with Vanderbilt game getting canceled. Like, they really do want to play, and they, like, I think they have some motivation. So if Cincinnati beats Georgia, I think it's you gotta give them their props, give them their due.
I think they will.
Do you? I think Georgia wins by, I'll say, multiple scores, like maybe 10, maybe 14, but I think Georgia wins comfortably.
Interesting.
Maybe not comfortably. I'll just say multiple scores. More than seven.
I think Cincinnati wins by like 10. The best bowl game, though, is
The offense has still got everybody. That's the thing. Other than, I think, Ben Cleveland, like, the offense should be, and the offense has been significantly better.
I mean, is this the best defense Georgia's played since Bama?
It could be.
It might be the best defense they played this year.
I mean, I don't care what the stats say. Like, Cincinnati's defense isn't better than Alabama. Like,
they're good, though. Cincinnati.
Yeah, they're definitely a solid defense for sure. It's going to be an interesting game. I think they have
the advantage at coach, Luke Fickell. Over Kirby.
You bite your tongue, sir. Luke Fickle, he wishes he was Kirby Smart.
I don't know. I think Luke Fickle's pretty good. And when he places Ryan Day, when he gets the Eagles job or something, I don't think we're going to be like, wow, Luke Fickle really made a mistake. Like, he's just a sitting giant. Like, Luke Fickle's already just... He is a sleeping college football giant, would be my guess.
He's at Cincinnati, all right? He's done a good job at Cincinnati. We'll see what he does when he gets to one of the big boys.
Well, look at what Butch Jones did. It's all smooth sailing.
I mean, Cincinnati is how you get to big time, that for sure.
Indiana, Brian Kelly, Ole Miss, and Oregon, Iowa State is the day after the playoff games. Folks, watch Ole Miss, Indiana at 12:30. Watch Oregon, Iowa State at 4 o'clock if you can. I think those two games will be awesome. I think I'm very much looking forward to Ole Miss, Indiana, but I might not be there because I think I'm going to.
I think Ole Miss is going to win that one. I think I was surprised to see Indiana 8-point favorite. I think Ole Miss is going to win.
Yeah, especially if it's a high scoring game. I don't think
right. Northwestern Auburn.
That is a game I will not watch one second of.
Oh no! I know you hate Auburn and you love Northwestern.
Northwestern's best running back just entered the portal. Like, none of these teams give a flying.
That's true. That's what's so unfortunate about the bowl season, is because we finally get to see these unique matchups that we never get to see, and then half the teams.
Yeah, their coach is gone. Like, Auburn's playing with nothing. Like, there's no reason for this to watch this game. There's just none. Like, I'm not watching Peyton Ramsey versus Bo Nix. I'm not doing it.
I had this one stat for Florida, Oklahoma. Florida is going to be without Kyle Pitts, Kadarius Toney, and Trevon Grimes. That's 51% of their receptions, 55% of their yards, and 69% of their touchdowns this season. So I think Kyle Trask is going to have his work cut out for him.
Yeah. All right.
And Marco Wilson also opting out. I'm sure Florida fans will be talking about that one.
And also watch the Oklahoma State Miami game tomorrow night. I think that'll actually be really fun. For that guy down there in Decatur, Georgia, for myself up here in Knoxville, Tennessee, that is all I've got. Matt, thank you as always. We'll be back next week to recap the college football playoff games, the bowl games that happened this week. I'm sure there will be more news that breaks and vacancies that still exist on the coaching front. Those will be picked up. Yeah,
we'll be a preview in the national championship next time we talk.
Fun ride as always. It's a full ride, if you will. Do you get it, folks? Yeah, you love it. Follow Matt at Matt_W_Green. Follow myself at Chase_Thomas. Go check out ChaseThomasPodcast.com. Leave us a 5-star rating and a review on Apple Podcasts. If you're an Apple Podcast listener, it helps more than you know. That is all I've got. Thank you as always, and we will be back with another episode tomorrow. Thanks, guys.
Nicely done, nephew. Chase Thomas Podcast. Hell yeah.